Welcome back in to another edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. Now 12 weeks in the books. We've only got a couple more weeks before we get into conference championship play, before we get to college football play, before we get to the pre-draft festivities. In this episode, we're going to break down what happened in week 12 in the form of helmet stickers, as we usually do on our Tuesday episodes. I can't wait to chop it up, but I can't chop it up by myself. So Dalton, from Connecticut, mm-hmm. How do you pronounce it? Is Connecticut, Connecticut?
It's Connecticut. If anybody pronounces it Connecticut, I'm going to stop talking to that human being immediately.
I love it. Straight to the point. Dalton is still in the United States, so catching him on the same time zone is such a nice thing to do. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about week 12. Mm-hmm. Let's just dive right in. We had a couple big games, one major upset where the SEC continues to cannibalize itself, but we'll talk about that when we talk about helmet stickers. So enough foreplay. Let's just talk about the helmet stickers. Dalton, who is your first helmet sticker for their week 12 performance?
The first one, and it's not just for his week 12 performance, but I think the way that he has kind of grown this year as a runner, it is Omarion Hampton, somebody who I think the vision from a consistency perspective isn't quite there as a zone runner yet. And listen, against Wake Forest, he was running through some semi-truck-like lanes, but he was also quite clearly the best athlete on the field. That burst that he has is outrageous. And then when you pair the burst with his contact balance and his flexibility through contact, you know, he's hit low, he's contorted in the air, and he's able to kind of find his feet and keep running. I don't think he's the most creative guy in the open field, but he did make a couple of guys miss. It didn't look super clean. But when you are, you know, 6 foot, 220 pounds, and you run a, you know, mid 4.4s, I think he's going to run with that acceleration that he has. It's really difficult to tackle him in the open field. And we saw that in this game. He ended up having 176 yards after contact in this game. He forced 6 missed tackles, according to PFF. I think it was even, you know, a couple more than that. And we have seen this year the zone rushes are going up. Now, I think, and I would have to go through and chart every single one of his rushes to know this for sure, but I do think duo runs are zone runs for PFF just because it's simpler to do it that way. And UNC runs a lot of duo with him on the field. And I love that they do that because duo is a very up and down, north and south type of run, but with the ability to bounce outside if that's the read that you get from the second level. And he is very good at doing that. He's also very good in short yarded situations. There was a couple in this game where he had to get 1 yard and he got 2 yards in a stacked box and he got hit behind the line of scrimmage. So it wasn't just the consistent, you know, 6, 9, 12, 20, 28-yard runs. It was the 2, 3, 4-yard runs that are also impressive in that Wake Forest game specifically. So you're looking at somebody who has probably the second best or even possibly the best athleticism at the position in this draft class. I think Nick Singleton is right up there with him, if not a little bit more explosive and a little bit shiftier, but with maybe a little bit less contact balance overall. And then JT is just the best overall runner in this class, somebody with no apparent weakness in his game whatsoever. But I wanted to shout out Omarion Hampton for the growth that I've seen from him this year and obviously the huge game against Wake Forest.
I love it. I'm really excited to when we get to the positional rankings part, because right now we're building our boards and we're watching the top guys. And that's exactly how I'm going to work through it to prepare for episodes. Is I'm just going to watch from the list down and rank from there. But I'm excited to get to those positional rankings when we do get to top 150s, top 175s, and have a firm list of prospects to see how these guys play out. Because running back is always one of the more running back and wide receiver, it feels like, among draft analysts and NFL teams, always seem like they're the more volatile lists. Like they're all over the place.
Yes. I think people just in general feel like they have a better grasp of those positions, whether they actually do or not. I think that a lot of people feel more confident evaluating them than they do offensive line. So when they are watching offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, things like that, they kind of just more go with the flow of, oh, what's Dane say about this guy? What's Lance Zuerlein say about this guy? What's Mel Kiper, if you're not in the know of who is actually watching these guys or not? You know, what does he say about this guy? So I think that's why we see the volatility in running back and wide receiver, because when you play Madden, when you play NCAA, you get to see those guys and evaluate those guys on those games. And a lot of us might not have the most knowledge in the world when it comes to these other positions. And so they just go with the flow with it.
Yeah. I would 100% prefer to watch offensive linemen all day long.
Then running backs, absolutely. I do not love watching running backs.
Ugh. For me, offensive line is such an art. Like the foot speed, the base, where does your weight like sit on your feet? Like all that kind of stuff is so nuanced, and it's like, I don't know. I love it. Your hands, yeah, it's whatever. I'm not gonna have to break it down. But that's a good segue into my first helmet sticker, because I gave one to an offensive line. We have on this podcast raved about the South Carolina defensive line. That South Carolina defensive line has had their way with Texas A&M, has had their way with the LSU offensive line, and given Will Campbell some issues. This past weekend, South Carolina won the game. Missouri made it close. But in this weekend, Missouri right tackle Armon Bembo gave up one pressure. No sacks. Had an absolutely stellar game. From his right tackle post at Missouri, another guy that's going to play guard at the next level. But whether it was Kennard, whether it was Parker, he just took care of business on the day. 35 pass block snaps, one pressure. That's a day at the office. And to the point where like I watch him and I think he's one of the more balanced offensive linemen. I don't think he has the quickest feet. I don't think he has the most explosive kick step. I don't think any of that. Like his redirect isn't my favorite either, but like he is the most balanced offensive lineman that I've watched a lot. And the body type screams guard, of course. And a lot of those things that I'd say he doesn't have, like the best this that I just said, like a lot of that is going to be really, really antiquated by kicking inside. And I think this guy might go round two. Armon Bembo might go round two. As a guard by the time we're done with the cycle. He's just having an unbelievable season. Hasn't given up a sack all year, according to PFF. And PFF's pressure charting has been a little bit – we found some discrepancies in it. But according to PFF, hasn't given up a sack all season. But his, like, that balanced, easy refinedness really shows through on his tape, even if he isn't the most athletic – player on the field. And that's not to say that he's not athletic, because every player that you're talking about being drafted in the top 100 of the NFL draft is athletic. So every player playing in the NFL is athletic. So Armon Bembo, man, he's gonna get my first helmet sticker.
No, listen, I love that. I've actually brought up Armon Bembo multiple times on this podcast, saying like, hey, I watched this dude, and it wasn't just him, but it was the left tackle. I can't think of his name right now. But those guys played really well against Texas A&M too. And Texas A&M, two of the freakiest pass rushers that we've seen over the past couple of years. And, you know, Nick Skorton is falling a little bit out of favor in the NFL draft community, I think, throughout the year, even though I think that he's played pretty decently overall. Shamar Stewart is somebody who is very highly regarded and is a legitimate freak at 290 pounds coming off of the edge. So I think when you watch Membau play and play against some of the best defensive lines in the country, not give up a sack all year, and play, like you said, a very balanced game overall. I really like the player. I haven't studied him in depth. I haven't gotten a grade on him or anything, but I haven't seen a false step so far from him this year. It's been a lot of fun to catch that Missouri team. And I want to bring up, they ran the crap out of the ball in this game as well. Was it Noel, the running back for Missouri? Is he, was there a Noel that used to go to West Virginia back in the day? That
I have no idea, man.
Anyways, smaller guy, but I thought that he ran the ball really well in that game as well. That was the one that I was kind of tuned into throughout the day. Lenoris is going to be a problem in the SEC for a while.
I'm stewing on something right now, but I'm going to wait. We're going to get to the spring. We're going to get to the summer.
It's not always pretty with him, but man, the way that the ball gets to where it needs to go from some really, really weird footwork and body situations outside of the pocket, on top of his size and ability to run the ball, he is a fun player. And this is me just saying, I don't care about him from an NFL draft perspective right now. He is just going to be a fun college football player for as long as he stays.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, Lenore Sellers is. But getting on to helmet sticker number two, let's stay on the offensive side of the ball for this one before I go to the defensive side. I've got one on that side, but whatever. We'll stick to the offensive side of the ball, and it's a player that we have both talked about extensively over the past week, a player that I wrote an entire film room on this past week before this game. And somehow, he still managed to go out and exceed expectations again of what you would expect for him to do on a Saturday. But that's Penn State tight end Tyler Warren, man. I'm running out of words on how to talk about him, because he's special. Like he's special in this game against Purdue. He put up 190 total yards, man. Like he almost put up 200 total yards as a tight end. He had a huge run that he broke through and then just pulled away from everybody in the open field on a wildcat look for 60, and he finished with 63 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Had a receiving touchdown in this game too on a pretty nice back shoulder ball from Drew Aller. But he went up and got it on a nice little slot fade and finished with 127 yards and one touchdown. And I think what was most impressive of that 127 yards is coming into the week on when I graded him, I didn't grade him super high as a route runner. Like I still saw like, well, and he's 6'6", 260. So like, it's like he runs routes like a 6'6", 260 guy. A couple of out routes that he ran where he created easy separation, he did not look like he ran routes like he was 6'6", 260. I thought he was subtle at the top of the route. I thought he used his hands really nicely to create a little cushion at the top of his route. But there was no wasted step, no wasted movement at the top of the routes. And he's breaking hard 90 on two of those routes that he caught. And so, again, running out of words for Tyler Warren. I think he's got blue chip versatility. He's a wildcat quarterback. Put him in the slot, put him in line, put him out wide, manufacture touches for him. He's got some unbelievably strong hands. He's got a one of one frame at 6'6", 260 to be able to do what he can do it to 6'6", 260. Like, and then he's going to go to Indy and do what he's going to do because he's a Penn State athlete. So I wrote the article last week titled "How High is Too High for Tyler Warren?" And for me, that number is getting increasingly smaller in terms of draft capital.
Yeah, I don't know where it stops with him, especially like because if they're going to make any headway in the college football playoff, they're going to need to lean on him offensively. They're going to need to give him 4, 5, 6, 7 wildcat snaps in that game. They're going to need to manufacture touches for him because literally nobody else in the outside is able to get open for that Penn State team. So they are going to need to, if I were them, I would keep all the wildcat stuff, maybe add a couple more things to the wildcat, and then also look at what is going on at Bowling Green and say, can we replicate this in the passing game to make sure that he touches the ball as much as Harold Fannin Jr. touches the ball there?
I'm glad you said that, because when I watched Harold Fannin Jr., I legitimately have no idea how this guy is always open, because he's legitimately Bowling Green's at the MAC level, legitimately the only weapon that you should worry about. Not, I mean, that's not 100% true, but like, he is your gold star.
Yeah.
And he is open so much. Like, how does this keep happening? And
it's, but and they, it's also, the yeah, they also do a really good job of manufacturing touches for him as well. They get him involved in the screen game. And I think that that's something.
Motion him into the backfield and give him handoffs.
Exactly. And I think you need to listen. There is no reason why the 6'6", 260 guy can't take a jet sweep pop pass and take it outside off tackle. Like those jet little fleet, it's an easy completion. There's no downside to it. There's no reason to not bring Pribula in every once in a while and run some triple option with the shovel option to Tyler Warren, because Pribula, I know Drew Aller is an NFL quarterback. Pribula is probably not. But that passing attack, those wide receivers are so bad that Pribula's legs, and Aller has shown a little bit more with his legs, but Pribula's legs could be a real weapon in the college football playoffs, where those guys are not going to get open at all against college football playoff teams. So I'm really interested to see what they do offensively to get Warren involved. And I think bringing Pribula in and bringing Warren into the backfield, using him as part of the triple option, or even using him as the quarterback on read options would be a big thing for them as well. So, like, obviously a freak athlete. And how high is too high for Tyler Warren? We'll find out in April. But I would be really surprised at this point if he falls outside of the top 32 in April.
Oh, really, yeah. Surprised. I would be surprised as well. It's hard to say, like, it's hard to judge against other draft classes, because we just had a player that many would say is a generational tight end fall out of the top 10. Like, and so it's hard to say, well, let's compare Tyler Warren to Brock Bowers. And you can't do that, because like, the strengths of this draft class aren't the same as the strengths of that draft class either. Yeah. So it's not like in a vacuum, you can't do that.
And also the thing with Brock Bowers is, at the end of the day, he was 6 foot three and a half, 235, 240 pounds.
Yeah.
And Warren is probably so they're actually kind of doing a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
Like getting the ball in the backfield. And that's something that Brock Bowers did really well with. I think Tyler Warren does that part of it better. Now, I think Brock Bowers is a better route runner. He's smoother because he is 240 pounds and not 260. But I don't see that much of a difference with the ball in their hands. And Brock was really good with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
So,
and that's to say, that's for me to say, by the time Indy comes and goes, and again, like, Brock didn't test, but like, everybody knew Brock Bowers is Brock Bowers. I'm not sure everybody knows that Tyler Warren is Tyler Warren the same way that people knew that Brock Bowers was Brock Bowers. So he might go there and he might actually test, and he might actually.
Yeah.
But there's a conversation we had about the combine where you want to monetize this thing, but your top athletes aren't doing it. So whatever, but that's a different conversation. If he goes and he tests, like, this guy could go top 10, and I wouldn't bat an eye in this draft class. He could go top 10 and I wouldn't.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Moving on to my second helmet sticker, you stayed on the offensive side of the ball. I think that's wrong. I think you should have went offense, defense, offense. I'm going offense, defense, offense here. I'm going defense. I am going with, it happens all the time, Dane Brugler brings somebody up, and all of a sudden we have to talk about him. But Mike Green had a 2-sack game, 9 pressures, second in college football this week, in pressures. A really fun pass rusher, man. He is a really fun pass rusher, and I do wonder – I'm going to have to get to the Ohio State tape to see how he looked against Simmons early in the year. But this is a guy who they listed at 250 pounds. He's a redshirt sophomore, so he probably doesn't declare unless he gets really good insight from the committee. But somebody who, for a 250-pound player in this game, I felt that he absolutely bullied that left tackle that he was playing against. He wins on the outside. His hands are a lot of fun, actually. He was able to counter and go inside track for one of the sacks. He kind of ran down the quarterback as he was trying to roll out right. But what really stood out to me on that sack specifically was the closing speed. He has a ton of burst in his game. Mm-hmm. I think he's got some nice fluidity and bend on the outside to go with it.
Yes, he does.
And he was more physical than I thought he was going to be. The database that I have listed him at like 240. And so if that's where he's kind of playing at, Marshall lists him at 250. Let him grow into his body a little bit. I think at absolute worst, you're looking at a guy who could eventually be a DPR type dude at the NFL level. But with that natural physicality that I saw from him, I really do think that given some time, given a little bit more meat on those bones, maybe a little bit better strength and conditioning program, wherever he ends up transferring up to if he stays in school, and you're looking at a dude who could legitimately be, you know, a top 50 pick moving forward. Dane had him at number 37 on his board. That might be a little bit too high. But like I said, I am way too out of the loop with his tape overall to know for sure.
Yeah, I would like the record to stand that I did give Mike Green a helmet sticker well before Dane Brugler put him in his top 50.
I did. That would have been when
I think it's gonna get the Virginia Tech game, week two. I think I gave
him it was either Virginia Tech or it was App State, but I think it would have been earlier than that. I think it probably would have been Virginia
Tech. I think it was that Virginia Tech game on September 7th. Yeah. Mike Green's a load of fun. Again, top 50 feels. Man, now that the NFL is getting back to running a lot of 12 personnel, not that they hadn't, like teams, but now they're running the ball a lot out of it again. Like,
yeah.
I struggle to see that's a player that I want on the field three downs. And if I'm taking a player top 50, I would like that player to have like a pretty decent role. And I guess DPR is a pretty decent role at the NFL level. So I don't want to discredit that.
But. Well, and if you're a team that runs a lot of 50 fronts, mm-hmm. I can see him being that kind of stand up outside linebacker type.
Brian Flores would love that dude.
Yeah. Who can drop into coverage and that kind of does make him a three down guy. But I do think if you're a, you know, and like a four down over front type of team, I don't really know if he's got the juice right now, at least to stand up for three straight downs. But that's about all I got for him. Let's move on to the third helmet sticker because this one might take a little bit of time. Carson Beck looked like honestly, maybe the best version of Carson Beck that I've seen. Because it was all of the outrageous aggressiveness that we've seen from him all year, but with actual confidence in what he was seeing mm-hmm. out there. And the movement was there. I think it was the first quarter where he scrambled and took a big shot at the end of it. I think that got his juices going a little bit. I think that got him really locked in for the rest of the game. And he slung the ball mm-hmm. around the field in this one. I was incredibly impressed with him. That is everything that we wanted to see from Carson Beck this year to justify, like, hey, this is a 101 guy. And listen, he's not a 101 guy now. There's no way that you can consider him, in my opinion, in round one mm-hmm. because of what we have seen. But if he gets his confidence back and they make a decent playoff run, you are looking at a guy who we were talking about day three. But if you consistently show that confidence and you play well against the best competition in a what have you done for me lately world, mm-hmm. in this quarterback class, you might have a team talk themselves into him.
You might. But I did because, again, it's not just he did it in this back half. He did it all of 2023.
Yeah.
Like, we can't.
I don't think he was doing this.
He was not doing this, no. But he was playing turnover-free football, consistent point guard in 2023. Mm-hmm. No brain dead thrown right into the chest of linebackers and second-level defenders. Like, none of it last year. So there is something larger than just he went on this mini run of the back of 2024 to hang your hat on. Mm-hmm. But again, he won't get a first round grade from me.
No.
I doubt he'll get a second round grade from me. even if a big run happens. But you're right. I mean, I remember I was a senior in college when it happened, but there was talk that, like, if Cardale Jones would have come out after a college football playoff and Big Ten championship run, that he would have gone first round. Mm-hmm. Like, that was legitimate talk. He had a press conference to say, "I'm coming back to school." Like, yeah. That's how big of a deal this was back then when Ohio State won the national championship, because Cardale Jones came in as the third string quarterback and absolutely lit up Wisconsin, lit up Alabama, and lit up Oregon in three straight games. And people were like, and he legitimately almost declared. Mm-hmm. He probably should have after that, but yeah. Looking at in hindsight, whatever. But it is a what have you done that for me now industry and league. And again, this is why I like the chart. I can see the full body picture, and it's not, you know. But I think there is a merit as well to just looking at, like, isolating the last six games. What have you done down the stretch? I think there's some merit to that as well. But man, he was on in this game. I charted him. Let's just look beyond 15 yards in this game. He was one of two on deep balls, 5 of 7 outside the numbers at the intermediate level, and 8 of 11 over the middle at the intermediate level. Mm-hmm. So, like, he wasn't just dinking and dunking, and it was yak. I feel like I've said this a lot on this podcast. I cannot overstate that this is the worst set of skill players Georgia's put on the field in a very long time. This was not like manufactured touches and easy looks and yak and empty calories. He was legitimately, his spray chart is like full field. It's like, mm-hmm. it's pretty phenomenal what he did in this game. He might have saved Georgia's season. They're ranked back in the top 12 now. We'll see how the playoff committee does tomorrow or tonight by the time this podcast episode comes out. But I mean, he was throwing up the hashes. He was throwing outside the numbers. He hit a deep ball. Like, this looked like old Carson Beck. Not even old Carson Beck. This was like a third party Carson Beck almost, yeah. From what we've seen in his career. So we'll see. Georgia, again, has an outside shot at the college football playoffs, and or not at the SEC championship game. And then they've got them now. They control their own destiny to make the college football playoff with UMass and Georgia Tech as their final two games after this win over Tennessee. So this win was huge. And again, Carson Beck should stack games against UMass and Georgia Tech, although Georgia Tech has an identity and they'll punch you in the face.
Yeah.
So
yeah, their defense is fun.
I'm not gonna say that he should just wash over that game either, but you know, we'll see how the rest of the SEC plays out, because Texas still has to play Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. And again, I stated how much I believe in Quinn Ewers, and it's not very much.
Quinn Ewers against that defensive front.
Against that defensive front and Willie the third. And yeah, if Texas loses that game, they're the SEC is filled with two lost teams, and Georgia holds the tiebreaker over Texas. Mm-hmm. Georgia holds the tiebreaker over Tennessee now. Alabama, I don't even know, because Alabama lost to Tennessee lost to Tennessee, but beat Georgia. And it's a mess. The SEC is a mess right now, but that's all to say, like, Carson Beck's going to have a legitimate chance to play some meaningful football again in 2024. And we are going to have to see Carson Beck not do the meme of the Oklahoma State backup quarterback, you know, that meme of coming in the field. We need him to not do that this time around when he gets the opportunity. And this is a good first step, because that's a big game to beat Tennessee with your season legitimately on the line. You lose that game, you're not making the playoffs. No shot.
No.
So, huge game for him.
Yeah.
All right. And for the last helmet sticker here, I'm going to go ahead and give it out to Illinois edge rusher, defensive lineman Gabe Akis. Akis, we've talked about him on this podcast before as well, is a player that I identified as an NFL player when he was a true freshman. He's a junior now, but he's played substantial snaps since he was a true freshman in 2022 on that stacked Illinois defense that had Johnny Newton and Keith Randall, Devon Witherspoon, and Quan Martin, and loads of NFL talent. He was a starter. Now as a true junior, I thought his sophomore tape was a little underwhelming. As a true junior, he's back up, though. He's already matched his career high in pressures that he had as a true freshman. He already has a career high in sacks. And it's because they're moving him around a lot more than just rushing him flat off the edge. Although that is predominantly where he's still rushing, but he's rushed 64 snaps from 5-tech as well. But in this game over the weekend against Michigan State, he rushed exclusively off the edge. And he was an absolute terror. And the offensive tackles at Michigan State are going to have nightmares about him, because he finished the game with 7 pressures, 2 sacks, quarterback hit, 2 quarterback hits, 2 tackles. and two stop tackles. They were both stop tackles as well, resulting in negative plays for the offense. That's a heck of a game for Gabe Atkins. Again, listen at 6'3", 275. So he's a beefy dude as well. Again, he doesn't have much length in his arms, but he's a beefy dude. Again, one of those guys that can play 5-tech and play 7-tech. I think 5 is probably where he fits best at the next level. But he's a player that can make a real impact at the NFL level. And I'll be interested to see if he declares or not, because he is having a career year, a very productive season for the Illini this season. So already up to 8 sacks and 35 pressures this season. So very interested to see what happens with Gabe Atkins here down the line. Does he decide to declare? Does he go back for a senior season? Does he transfer elsewhere? Because he'll have suitors if he decides to put his name in the portal. So that's definitely a name I'm keeping an eye on. But Gabe Atkins gets my third helmet sticker for his performance against Michigan State with 7 pressures, 2 sacks, 2 quarterback hits, 2 stop tackles. Heck of a performance. But that's about it for this episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Again, we'll be back tomorrow to do Dafter Draft. Again, coming up with 2 or 3 topics that we'll talk about in depth about whether we're buying or selling it and why. So it's always a really fun episode on Wednesdays. So tune in for that. But for now, this has been the Daft on Draft podcast.